So the teenage brain has previously thought to be just a young adult brain. But actually, research has shown that it's actually quite different biologically from the adult brain, just as it is different from the children and then the baby brain. And why it is different is that it's got this wonderful mix of a different level of ability to learn, but there may be some vulnerabilities that are still hidden in the teenage brain that are not yet at the point of adulthood that has been a focus of recent research. First of all, a teenage brain has been not necessarily a source of much basic science research. There's been a lot of clinical trials and neuropsychological, you know, evaluations of the teen brain and sort of their social behavior and education behavior, but it's been poorly understood whether the teenage brain is actually substantively different from the adult brain. And in fact, we can think of research that we know has been done on, say, the baby brain that has translated into new methods of treating, you know, babies with brain injury or early learning, you know, early childhood learning. A lot of research that's come from the basic field has been translated into, you know, clinical and educational use. Likewise, the late adult brain, the senescent brain, we know that a lot of the work that's been done in basic research on dementia has been actually translated and put into use for new cures and treatments for dementia and how to manage people at the other end of life. But what's been ignored has been this sort of intermediate zone of the teenage brain, which is not yet fully an adult brain. And so what we have, and we've been giving these talks to high schoolers themselves, is trying to give them a sense of really this surge of new information that's been available but hasn't been translated yet. Not enough of the basic research that's talking, which we'll talk about in a minute, about the developing teenage brain has been necessarily put into use with respect to what kind of courses in high school education, how they're treated in the legal systems, how they might be specifically vulnerable to substance abuse and addiction. And we need to get this information across because it's going to be very exciting, as it will help us understand these, you know, kids better and help them create tools for themselves. The teenage brain is a late childhood brain. It's not yet a fully mature adult brain. So they're at the end of a childhood pattern of brain physiology, and they're emerging the adult pattern. So they're sort of at the crossroads of these two points in development. And as you know, children can learn very quickly. They go through what we call a critical period of synaptic plasticity, where early in childhood, you know, children can learn 2 and 3 languages flawlessly, whereas adults struggle to learn a second language with even getting a mild accent under control. So the teenager is still at that peak learning. They're coming down to adult levels, but they're still more able to, you know, pick things up and memorize and imprint on things than perhaps later in life. Now, the thing is, though, they also haven't acquired a really important feature of the adult brain, which is how the different brain areas really connect to each other. So as we get older, we develop better, stronger connections between our different regions of the brain. And it actually develops from sort of the back of your brain to the front, the connectivity of the brain. And big surprise, the last place to develop is the frontal lobe. So this process is called myelination, which is actually a wrapping of the connections to make them conduct signal faster so that you connect up parts of your brain faster. It's probably how adults compensate for not having the brilliant learning that children have. So the last place to connect is the frontal lobe. Now, we know that the frontal lobe has some very special properties. It's what controls insight, judgment, blocks you from too much risk-taking behavior, and these are all issues with the teenager brain. So teenagers are notorious for risk-taking, poor judgment, not really thinking through things properly, yet they can be very sharp at the same time and be memorizing all sorts of things for the SATs and all these standardized tests and be whizzing through material, yet they're not showing the judgment. And so that's the paradox, that they are very, very sharp on the one hand with respect to their, you know, ability to learn and their physiology that underlies learning, but the connectivity is lagging. They're not there yet. So you have very bright people who may not actually be ready for prime time in terms of their judgment and insight. Girls' brains throughout development seem to be reaching maturity 1 to 2 plus years ahead of the boys' brains. And we know this. I've just mentioned this process of myelination, of connectivity. Well, the girls appear to myelinate to cause the closure and of this adult process 2 or 3 years earlier than boys. And when you look at brain growth, what happens across development is your brain grows, and then it actually starts to prune itself a little bit as you become adult-like. So the number of brain cells in your brain is actually comes down a little bit to become adult-like. You want that. It's a part of a pruning that's important. So when we look at when that happens, it happens a little bit earlier in girls than it does in boys. So actually, you know, boys are completing the process into their late teens and early 20s, whereas girls are completing this process of connectivity and sort of the pruning part of the brain more towards the end of the teenage years, middle to end of the teenage years. Now, given that lag, it makes some people have suggested that we might consider some gender-based learning. Now, it is possible that the girls are ready to learn certain things possibly earlier than boys because of this ability that they mature sooner. And so one asks whether some subjects could be taught to girls earlier than boys, and we might need to consider this in terms of high school curriculum. However, it's ideally, this is not just gender-based. Every individual is going on their own little curve, and it would be obviously, everybody's different. Even two boys are different from each other with respect to actually when they're reaching the end of their brain growth. And ideally, of course, you know, in an ideal world, teaching to an individual's brain development would be the best possible, you know, strategy. The interesting thing is that the teenage brain, because of it's still rather hyper-excitable compared to later in life, because it's still got some childlike qualities. And this brings with it some vulnerabilities to injury from a number of different things. One, of course, is substance abuse. Now, substance abuse and addiction actually turn out to use the same systems as normal learning does. So when you learn a task, you're memorizing, and we understand the biology of how brain connections actually strengthen with learning. Now, teenagers probably, as do children even better, do this learning very robustly. Unfortunately, addiction is kind of a form of learning, as you can imagine. The more you're exposed to something, the more affinity you have for it. And recent studies, only in the last 5 years, have shown that addiction actually does use some of the same molecular biology and physiology as learning. Therefore, studies have shown, both clinical and basic research, that actually teen brains can get addicted faster and stronger than adult brains. So teenagers can have a lifelong problem with trying to shed an addiction that has been acquired as a teenager compared to later. Addiction at any time in life is not good, but this is it suggests that they are actually more vulnerable to this long-term process. In addition to the addiction issue, the drugs themselves can have more long-term effects on teenagers than even adults. So, for instance, alcohol would be a good example. Alcohol toxicity can actually cause more brain damage in a teenager than it can an adult. It's not good at any age, but the teenage brain can actually suffer more damage for an episode of, you know, alcohol intoxication, of severe alcohol intoxication, for instance, than an adult brain. Another substance that's used is, of course, marijuana, and the cannabinoids, which is the chemical term for that, have been shown to affect teenage brains actually to a greater extent than adult brains. This is in animal studies, and there are some clinical trials that might be looking at this as well. And what has been found that there's actually a more longer term impairment of memory, even up to a week out following one exposure to marijuana or a cannabinoid substance in experimental studies. So the effects are actually more long lasting. There's another study where nicotine was exposed to either adult rats versus teen rats, you know, the equivalent of a teenage rat, and they looked at brain activity with an exposure to nicotine. And we know nicotine is a really addicting substance. Well, the adult brain activated on exposure to nicotine, but the teenage brain was like 10 times more bright with this marker of activation than the adult brain. So it was really, really responding to this addicting substance. So again, it suggests that there is this possible explanation that because addiction is a form of learning and they do that better, that we have to take these issues more seriously. When we talk to these kids in the high schools, we're trying to give them that information so they can make their own judgments and learn that maybe it's not okay for themselves to do this kind of activity or subject themselves to these risks. But paradoxically, the risk-taking behavior, the judgment, the insight is the one thing that this group is relatively weak at until they grow into that ability. So we're hoping, since it's a fact-based generation, that by giving them facts, they actually might hear the facts, even though they may not necessarily be able to make that judgment call subjectively on their own. I think we as a society have to think about what environments are we placing teenagers in, and what are we holding them accountable to, and how unreasonable or reasonable are we being? There have been actually, we do know that they take risks more. You can quantify it on psychological testing, and animals studies will show that too. They're going to be taking more risks, and they're not quite there with respect to their judgment. So actually, there was a Supreme Court debate about this several years ago. It was written up in Science magazine as to whether the adolescent was akin to mental disability because they were just not there yet in terms of their ability to judge. I think that you could obviously see this information stretching into the wrong direction. It's not going to be an excuse for bad behavior. I think, again, by talking to the teenagers about what it is and where they're at, I think we are, from externally, giving them the information that they might make better choices and know when to objectively say to themselves, "Ooh, maybe I'm not equipped to handle this situation yet." So this is the whole point of these lectures that we give to the teenagers themselves, not to the parents exclusively, not to their teachers exclusively. We talk to them and we give them the same talk, but few groups have gone out to actually talk to teenagers themselves. This is the first generation of adolescents that have had access to this kind of information because it didn't exist. I mean, a lot of the stuff that we're quoting is stuff from 2006 and 2007 and since 2000. So a lot of it's very new. So previous generations just didn't have this accessible. And it will take some years until it gets into textbooks and health and growth courses, etc., which is probably where we hope that this information will land. So the idea is that if we give them a sense that they actually might be more vulnerable to certain things, so they might want to make different choices when it comes to substance use or putting themselves at risk, and also to tell them that they have actually probably better learning capacity now than ever again for certain types of learning, and to embrace that and really try to use this time in their lives to respect the fact that they have this strength. And so it's all good messages. But rather than them necessarily, they might not use this time as wisely, and it's a very special time. So we want to let them know that they're in this very golden period of development. We've been very pleased with how they've responded. They've asked us a lot of great questions. They've been very interactive. because they're very interested in themselves, and it's a time when you should be interested in yourself. You're trying to figure yourself out. So we've had lots of questions, you know, like how much sleep do I need? What is sleep deprivation doing to my brain? Can I get away with this? Or how much do I really need? And they really want answers. And I think it's a, as I said, it's a fact-based generation. This is like the information age. They are like brokering information all day long. This is like, this is a big issue for them. And so you give them this information about themselves, and some of it is enlightening to them. I mean, we had a lot of like, oh, so that's why I do that. You know, oh, that's da-da-da, you know. And that's been a lot of that kind of response. I've had other, you know, responses from girls saying, well, should we be, you know, in different classrooms from boys, and boys asking, well, you know, why are boys more aggressive than girls, and, you know, why can't we sit down, as you know, and stay and sit and read these books as easily as our, you know, the girl classmates can. We've had some, you know, sensitive questions about drug abuse, and it's a safe place to ask these questions because it can be, it doesn't have to be so personal. It can be hypothetical, but we have facts for them. So the parents, again, were, many of them came back to us with, oh, this is amazing. You've explained why, you know, my kid is this way, and now I'm going to be a little bit more patient with that kid. I realize that the kid is not, you know, this hateful person who's constantly, you know, trying to reject me or being, you know, forgetful, or that it's really not necessarily their fault that they are this way, and to, you know, sort of embrace their energy, but understand that some of these things they do aren't really their fault. You know, they really are not. We tend to, as parents, because they appear adult-like in size, think that they should be responsible for themselves and be showing up at the appointments on time and this, that, and the other, and they make mistakes, and they're not there yet. So I think it has, the parents are like, oh, this, I can just back off a little bit, and that's been really nice to see. This is an area, as I said, it's not been neglected, but it's sort of just been overlooked. I mean, there was way more excitement, you know, looking at the infant brain and then at the senescent and older adult, you know, the degenerating aspects of, you know, later life. That's, a lot of money has gone into those two extremes because they've been very pressing and big healthcare burdens, et cetera. But, you know, now that we've sort of gone beyond that, and the lots of active research in both those ends, we can begin to recognize that there are multiple stages of life for the brain, and each of those stages are actually physiologically different from one another, and that the teen brain, the adolescent, peri-adolescent brain, is its own little section of development and has some, you know, very unique signatures to it. And I think that it's a place where a lot of human, you know, psychological research as well as basic research will now start to come together. We kind of needed the two ends of life to sort of anchor us so that we could then like move in and understand that there's a huge difference from early life to late life. So now, and from early life to adult. So what's going on for the toddlers? What's going on for the school age kids? What's going on for the, you know, tween generation? What's going on for the mid-teens, you know, and what's going on for the early adults? So the early adults, you know, brain development does not finish until sometimes 23, 24, 25. So there's a whole story there that's probably yet to be mined. So I think it's going to be an area that will have impact on our education, our social policies, you know, health policies. We already know, for instance, that, you know, drugs that are used for treatment for adults, for psychiatric conditions, for instance, for depression, we already know, we saw that in the news 2 years ago with, you know, the effects of some of these antidepressants on the teen brain were unexpected. It was not really even on anybody's radar screen that these, you know, people who are weighing the same amount as their adult counterparts would have any different need of medication compared to the adults. We could understand that a small child would have need a smaller dose, they weigh less, etc. But teenagers were kind of just lumped in with adults, and I think that's a really good example of why it's going to have impact on medical therapy, I think, too.